Yes, my name is Tom Wright. I am Julie's nephew. I'm from a student at the University of New South Wales. So I study mechatronic engineering, but the reason I'm in Adelaide is for the solar car challenge. We just drove from Darwin to Adelaide and crossed the line first yesterday.
And you cross the line first. That's just amazing. And I'm sitting here with a winner. But go back a step or two. Tell people what mechatronics is.
So mechatronics
Or
is, yeah,
mechatronics.
mechatronics. So pretty much it's for those students who are indecisive about which engineering they want to do. The best way to describe it is like robotics engineering. It's like halfway between mechanical and electrical. So you get a sort of mix of the mix of engineering systems, which fits really well into like the solar car team because it's a lot of electrical stuff and a lot of mechanical stuff.
People who are designing one of those solar cars would be expert in mechatronics.
I think on well, there are quite a few mechatronic students on the team, and it's sort of good because you're almost an all-rounder. But there's for our team at least, there's a pretty set mechanical team and electrical team, and those two are quite separate. So there are people who do mechatronics that are in both, but the electrical team is mostly made up of electrical engineers and mechanical engineers.
And is the study focusing on sustainability issues?
It's sort of like for us, it's just trying something new, and sustainability issues come with that. So, with this challenge, you want to be the aim is to be super efficient and use as much solar panel as you can, and so designing for those sort of two main criteria, you really get to see like how to make systems efficient and sustainable and use as little power as you can.
So, how long have you been on the road?
So on the road, we left Sunday. So Sunday and got back yesterday. So pretty much 6 days on the road straight, trying to go 600 or 700 kilometers a day on average, with some of those being less, some of those being more. So it's been a few days on the road, sleeping in swags every night, which has been good. But a lot of focus on trying to make sure everything is working. Like even if nothing went wrong, each day would still like every night we'd check every bolt in the car, check every connection. Yeah, because we only got to charge every 2 days. So,
How does that work?
So in my class of solar cars, which is the cruiser class, the aim is for it to be more like a real life car that anyone could drive. So it's got multiple seats, but and a battery in the back of it. So as you would in like say a normal petrol car, you'd fill it up when it gets empty. The aim is to fill up our solar car with enough charge to get us 2 days. So the 2 days thing is set by the regulation from the BWSC, the Bridgestone World Solar Challenge. And so, yeah, every 2 days we get to plug it in for a couple of hours at the night and put in as much electricity into the battery as we can, ready to go. And the longest day was 1,200 kilometers on one charge, which was quite a stress, just trying to get like getting very low on charge and still being 100 kilometers out of Cooper PD, and yeah, not a few days ago, so it's quite stressful.
So how do you charge?
So the way you charge is as you would charge any solar car, oh sorry, electric car today. So
Plug it
you
in.
just plug it straight in. There's this special like high high power plug that you put into the car. And so we've just got a little, it's almost like a socket at the front. You just plug it in and let it go for a few hours. And yeah, so it was pretty simple to charge it, but it was more the logistics of trying to organize and get there at the right time, at the highest speed you can without running out of battery and trying to stay.
Did you get towed?
Yeah, so if you run out of battery, yeah, you've got to put it in a trailer. Which did happen to some teams, unfortunately. And once you've trailered, then you can't win. So there ended up being three teams in my class in the cruiser class that didn't trailer. So that was the solar team Eindhoven from the Technical University of Eindhoven in the Netherlands, and then there was the IVE team from Hong Kong, and us. So we were the three teams that didn't trailer. Every other team either ran out of battery or had problems, so they had to trailer it. So
and does that go against them?
Yeah. So for those teams, even though they had very very good cars, and in a lot of ways they're probably more practical than us. They had cup holders in their cars, for example. Like we didn't. So things like that. They just because they ran out of charge, they didn't get to. Like they didn't have the option or the opportunity to be in the podium position of the top three. So we're still waiting on the results for the final points. But
that's amazing. It's always good to watch.
Mm.
But I'm also sitting here with Julie and Kirsty. And do you have any questions that you'd want to ask?
Yeah,
I should have said it earlier. I've
forgotten. Oh, it was about one car smoking.
Mm.
Can you tell us about why that was the car was smoking?
Yeah, so one of the teams is Team Vattenfall from the Technical University of Delft, also in the Netherlands. So this team, they always do amazingly well. They were on track to be first in their very very expensive car. I think it was worth almost $2 million.
That was another one of my questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a range of prices. Like the winning car from Belgium was $2.6 million, which is obviously incredibly expensive. But so this the team was smoking or that caught on fire. I think it was on the second day. They were trying to go as fast as they could because they had some other teams right on their tail, and so they were just trying to keep in front of it and get as far as they could before the 5 p.m. deadline. And they pretty much just ran one of their batteries too low. So the way that the batteries we use work is you can keep drawing power from them. You think of a phone battery. And you see the percentage, it's either it goes from 100 to 0. But physically, that's not how batteries work. You can keep putting more energy into them and they get more unstable. Or you can keep taking energy out of them and they get more unstable. And once you've taken a certain amount of energy out, the chemistry in it changes and that battery cell is permanently damaged.
Volatile as well.
It does, yeah. And that's exactly what happened to Vattenfall. So on the second day, they ran their battery too low and damaged a few cells, and that was fine. It was okay for them. It wasn't.
Do they have a meter that shows that?
They do. They were just trying to push it as hard. There's no set limit. It's all it's sort of like a fake science. You just don't want to go too far. And they really pushed it, and they pushed it just too far. So they did damage some cells, but it was fine. They could keep going, and then a few days later. Whether it was due to the heat or the speeds they were going, it was not that far out of Adelaide. One of the cells probably exploded, and lithium, when it's in contact with air, it burns. And luckily, they had a professional driver who pulled them off the side of the road, and pretty much got out. Someone from one of the chase cars pretty much just grabbed the driver around the waist and hoisted him out and pushed the car away, and less than a minute later the whole thing pretty much exploded and caught fires. Yeah, absolutely. It was terrible to see. You hate to see it because these students would have spent 100% of their time, full time, for about a year working on this, designing it, building it, to get to this competition, and then on the last day when they're so close to,
unrepairable.
It was ashes. Yeah, there was nothing left. They got the number plate, which is burnt, and that's about it. So, it's all made out of carbon fiber, which I've burnt. They were very sadly sitting at the finish line yesterday when we saw them. But
did
Did you go drinking with them last night?
They weren't there. I don't think they were in the mood for partying, which is quite understandable. Oh. But yeah, I think it was also one of the terrifying things then is like if you lose a car, that's like the university or all the people who like who fund you, like they sort of get a bit tentative. Like, do we really want to fund this team again? Because they wasted $2.6 million. So they're thinking, oh, will we get funding again?
So is every year a new car built by the students? Did you build that car brand new this year?
No, so we're sort of in this, semi-unique position. Our car's a bit older. Uh-huh. So this car was built for the 2017 race. Uh-huh. So the Bridgestone World Solar Challenge only goes every 2 years. The car we were driving was designed in 2016, built in 2017, raced in 2017, broke down 1,000 kilometers in, like unrepairably. And then the last few years, or like last few years, have been trying to make it more reliable and fix it and get it so it'll work. And it did this year, which is great.
Can you use it on the road? Is there a use for that car now that you've done that?
I guess apart from showing that it can be done, not a huge amount for our car. The German and Dutch teams were showing us all the features that in ways that it can be used normally. And I know the Bochum team from Northern Germany, they actually have a European number plate on their car, so they do drive it around. drive it around the German countryside legally, but for us it's really just a way to show the other students what can be done. And
are you able to tell us a highlight? You don't have to, it's one of those questions that you always want to think about.
I guess the highlight, the highlight started at Tennant Creek. So it was the second night of the race. Like before, so we didn't have the most organized team the whole way. Probably because we're so young and not many of us. Like there were only four of us who'd been on a race before or had done something with the solar car before. It was all a little bit disorganized. But on that day at Tennant Creek, it's where the team really switched on and started making some serious plans and that got exciting. So the beginning of the third day, just out of Tennant Creek, we knew there was a stretch of gravel, which because the solar car tires have very thin, very smooth tires with not much tread, so they pop very easily. And we were very worried about that. We were pretty sure that our tires would pop that day, and because this is the start of the very long stretch, the 1,200 kilometer stretch without charging, we really wanted to minimize time and we didn't want to pop tires. So like that night we planned to put these road legal tires on, which are pretty much motorbike tires with like a big tread, go the 48 kilometers over the over the gravel, and then straight away after it switch the tires back to the smooth solar car tires. And like with that plan, like that the night before we did it, we rehearsed like who's gonna go where, like two people on each wheel, and we changed all four tires in less than 5 minutes. It was a great feeling. It felt just like a racing car pit stop.
Is it just like changing a tire?
Quite similar, yeah. For us, it's very similar. So, like, our front wheels have 3 nuts. Yeah. At the back, they have 6.
It's 5 minutes.
Yeah, for all tyres. And then by the end of the race, we were getting front tyre changes down to, like, 2-3 minutes. Like, off the side of the road, change on the side of the road, like, on back onto the road within
a few minutes. So
they're not meant to, but I think we had our suspension set up a bit strangely. So it was always our front passenger wheel.
How many
front
tires do you carry?
Lots. So we had maybe 15 or 20 to last us.
Support crew carry them?
Yeah, so they're all in the... so we have a bunch of spare tyres in the trailer that we carry. And then we have a few spare rims with tyres already placed onto them, sitting in the boot of one of our control cars. So as soon as we hear like tyres popped over the radio, we'll pull over, run over the solar car, take the wheel off, take the whole rim off, put the new one on, screw back on, run back to the car, and off we go again.
Is it dangerous when a tyre pops?
Not really. It's definitely more noticeable in a solar car than a normal car. In a solar car, everything is less like it, we sort of take it for granted in a normal car just how quiet they are, but in a solar car, it's really very loud. You hear every road noise. The whole way, it's you sort of got to shout to talk to the person sitting next to you. But yeah, no. So they one of the tires popped while I was driving the solar car. On the fourth day. And you just hear it pretty much hiss, and then you hear the aluminium rim start going along the, which isn't a pleasant sound, but. Almost a grinding noise, but it wasn't too dangerous. Like, it's still quite controllable when it happens. But
Do you have gears?
No. So we have two motors, and they are there's pretty much the rear rims that just slid over the motors, and yeah, the motors just turn the wheels directly. So the motors are about 10-15 centimeters thick. And they're full of magnets and electrical windings. And you just pump electricity through it and it spins, and that's...
So you accelerate, like as you would in an usual car?
Mm-hmm. A lot slower. So these motors, they are... you hear about the Tesla cars and how they accelerate super fast. So there's sort of a trade-off between efficiency, motor efficiency, and motor torque, like the amount of power they can give out, like how much force they can give. And so our motors, they're very, very efficient, but very, very low torque. So like when you accelerate, it's very hard to accelerate uphills, especially when you're stopped.
Yeah.
But like once you're going, they do accelerate quite well.
I want to ask you if you have driven through the middle of Australia before.
Mm. Yeah.
It's one of my favourite things to do. You mentioned getting into Coober Pedy, like that stretch.
Oh, it's beautiful too. So beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, so
almost eerie.
It is, all these mountains on the side of the road.
And salt lakes.
Yeah, salt lakes everywhere,
It's just this quietness.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden a goat will jump out or something.
Yeah, yeah. You just see camels walking around on the side of the road. Yeah. So I'd never done the north to south, the Darwin to Adelaide. But in November, December last year, for the solar car team, we did a Guinness World Record driving from Sydney to Perth and back.
Yeah.
So that's probably the closest I got to driving through Australia. But it was...
The batteries.
So I'm seeing...
Just a little bit.
Yeah, all good.
Just a little bit. We'll just get as much as we can out of it. Yeah,
I'm good. Yeah, and the air around Port Augusta is probably one of my favourite places in the world. Like, it's stunning. The mountains are very flat. And so it's good to see that again. But,
Is that Flinders Ranges then?
Flinders Ranges, yeah.
Port Augusta would be,
And also, you've met Elon Musk.
Yeah, so that was a couple of months ago. It was July. That was another one of my engineering projects I was working on. So we built Hyperloop Pod, which is this idea for a new form of transport. We built a pod in just a couple of months, flew it across to California and raced it. And we came seventh, which was amazing. Yeah. We're over the moon with that, because we're like, as a first year team, like we came first in the first year teams. And
most interesting university course I've ever heard of.
It's pretty different. But almost as with this, like it's kind of fun being like a lower budget than everyone else. So like the winning team, like the top four teams there had like budgets of $1.6 million, and we had $30,000
to work with. That's brilliant. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So we're, yeah, very.
How many were there? How many teams were there?
So at Hyperloop, there were 22, with like 300 that applied, I think.
Seventh. That's pretty good.
It was Munich, then EPFL, which is a Swiss uni, and ETH Zurich, which is another Swiss uni. And then TU Delft, which is Dutch, then MIT, like the famous MIT, then University of Wisconsin, who always do quite well, and then us. So we're over the moon.
It should be. What were you doing next year?
So next year, going exchange. So I'm going to go to University of Mannheim in southern Germany. So I'll probably just do all of my general electives there. So I won't do a huge amount of engineering, but it might give me an opportunity to, learn some culture, because I haven't really been overseas that much.
German?
I don't know a lick of German, so that's going to be definitely something to work on. But I'm definitely going to try and learn German, because it'd be a shame to go over there and not learn the language. So I'll definitely be spending a lot of time practicing my German.
Yeah.
But like all my courses are in English, so it won't be like going from nothing to technical German in just a few months. But I'll definitely be learning a bit of German while I'm here, and hopefully speak as much as I can while I'm over there.
So does all of this lead into a career?
No, not really. But at the moment, I'm just trying to keep as many options as I can open, like sort of just say yes to everything.
Your second year, aren't you?
I'm second year university, yeah. So it's treated me quite well, just being able to like walk straight into the solar car and straight into Hyperloop, and really just none of them have really, they're not really any career. Career paths, but maybe career doors. Even just being here, we got to meet some Tesla people and got
pretty to impressive on a CV.
Which also helps. But it's kind of nice just to be able to have that little bit of technical stuff under your belt. And
was it always a dream to do this sort of thing?
I wouldn't say. Like, when I was leaving school, I didn't think I'd love to be in the solar car. I'd love to build a Hyperloop. I never really expected to have travelled like as much as I have by this point in my uni. None of it was really planned at all. It was sort of when I got to uni, it was all theoretical. Just a lot of maths on pieces of paper. And while I know it's super important, it's not, it doesn't excite me as much as, I guess, the rest of engineering. Yeah. So I sort of went out and looked for what I could do to sort of supplement the theoretical side, and SunSwift, which is the solar car team, came up. And it made sense. So even though I was only in my first year, I joined and just went along with it for a while, and here I am.
Yeah,
just over 12 months later.
That's an exceptionally good news story.
Yeah, I know. I've been very, very lucky, incredibly lucky so far. And just to see if I can keep going on the doing something different every couple of months.
Will there be a celebration from the uni when you get back?
That'd be quite nice. Yeah, we had a sort of celebratory dinner with all of our team, which was really nice. It was sort of just take a deep breath and just enjoy it. And then last night we also went to a pub and got to sort of celebrate just finishing with the rest of the teams, which was great.
Yeah.
While on the race we're all sort of competitors, now it's sort of. You can sort of have a laugh with everyone and and that was really good. And they're great fun, the rest of the teams. And trying to teach us some Dutch, like the Dutch teams were having a good laugh with us. And we swapped shirts for a lot of things. So,
I reckon it sounds pretty amazing.
It has been great fun.
And you're sitting here in a place called Christie Walk, which is probably the only urban eco-village in the world that is within the city square. And we've got 27 households, 4 of them made out of straw bales. And, 27 households on 2,000 square metres, and over 35% of it is green space.
Yeah, well...
That's pretty awesome too.
Well, even just walking here from the city centre, like, so close, and it was almost like walking into an oasis as I walked down here.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's sort of very fitting, I think, to finish this whole race.
And an eco-village.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who else would do that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think that's fabulous.
It's quite fitting.
Yeah.